And we are on air for Fan for Racing's NASCAR race review. And tonight we are reviewing the races at Richmond Raceway as well as Portland International Raceway. So definitely looking forward to our show tonight. And joining me shortly will be our co-host, Sal Sagala. In the meantime, I'm going to go through our agenda here. We're going to start with a few updates from the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA East Series. They did not race this weekend, but they will be racing next weekend at Bristol. And we'll talk more about that in this first half hour. Then we're going to review the ARCA West race at Portland. It was an exciting finish and a little bit of controversy, but again, we'll talk about that when we do our review here in a few minutes. At the top of the hour, we'll get into the NASCAR Xfinity Series review, not at Darlington, but at Richmond Raceway. And then at 9:30 Eastern Time, our guest is Dean Thompson with High Point Racing. We're going to talk to him because he's just won the second consecutive championship at Richmond at Irwindale Speedway. So that's pretty exciting, and I'm looking forward to chatting with him about that. Then at about 10:02, the top of the hour, we're going to get into a few updates from the NASCAR Truck Series. They did not race this past weekend, but I believe they're going to be racing this coming weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Okay, now then, I do hope that Sal gets here shortly so that we can kind of get started. I'm going to go ahead and get started with what we have. Everybody knows, I didn't mention this, but I hope everybody knows, 10 o'clock is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off with our Fan for Racing crew, and we'll have some of our crew members coming on board at that time. Okay, let's get started with the updates from the ARCA Menards Series. They are racing this weekend, September the 16th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Bristol Motor Speedway. It will be the Busch Beans 200, and it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. Now, along with the ARCA Menards Series, we are also going to be having the ARCA East also racing this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway, and this is their season finale. So the champion will be crowned after the Busch Beans 200 on Fox Sports 1 at Bristol Motor Speedway. So a big race for the ARCA East. But there's also points paying for the Busch Beans 200 for the Sioux Chief Showdown. So the Sioux Chief Showdown is also going to be racing this weekend. The drivers that are competing in that championship are also racing this weekend. And that's going to be very exciting. One race, two series, three series, and points for all three of those series. So this is a do-not-miss race for the ARCA Menards Series as well as the ARCA East. Now, also, let me give you the points here for the ARCA East because they, as I mentioned, are going to be crowning their champion this weekend. So the series point standings for that group is pretty much between two drivers, and that's Ty Gibbs, who is 16 points above Corey Heim. Corey Heim is in second place, and those are the two drivers that are going to be competing for that championship this weekend at Bristol. The other top five drivers are Thad Moffitt, Nick Sanchez, and Brad Smith round out the top five. Those are only two drivers, actually, have competed in all 17 races. I'm sorry, this is the ARCA standings. This is not the ARCA East standings. But all, the two drivers that have competed in all 17 races are Ty Gibbs and Corey Heim. Thad Moffitt and Nick Sanchez has competed in 15 of those 17 races, and Brad Smith in 16 of those 17 races. Now let's go back, because I do want to cover the point standings for the ARCA East. Let's see if I can get that up here. The ARCA East. Okay, now again, this is the final race at Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend. Sammy Smith currently holds the lead. Yeah, he is 24 points above Daniel Dye. He has the 3 race wins, 6 top 5s along with 6 top 10s, and 1 pole award. So he's got an average start of 4.1, an average finish of 4.6. Daniel Dye in second place doesn't have any wins here. He did win a race in the ARCA Menards Series, but he has the 2 top 5s and 7 top 10s, and again, he's 24 points back. In third place is Mason Diaz, 33 points back. Then it's Joey East at 38 points back, and Max Gutierrez at 40 points back, rounding out the top 5. The only other driver that has all 7 races under their belt is Raja Karuth in 6th place, and he's 45 points back. the next drivers from 7th through 10th have not raced the entire series. Parker Retzlaff is in 7th with 6 races. Taylor Gray has 4 races in 8th. Ty Gibbs, 3 races, and he's 9th place. And in 10th is Stephanie Moyer with 5 races under her belt. So this race this weekend is going to be a big, big event for the ARCA East. Next, we'll cover the point standings here for the Sioux Chiefs Showdown. for the Sioux Chiefs Showdown, Ty Gibbs continues to lead that race or that series. He has 338 points to Corey Heim's 325 points. Thad Moffitt is in third at 293 points. Then it's Nick Sanchez. He's actually tied with Thad Moffitt in that third place position. And Taylor Gray rounds out the top 5. Now Taylor Gray has 6 of the 8 races under his belt. Brad Smith in 6th place has attended all 8 races. Now, this race this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway is the 9th of the Sioux Chiefs Showdown, and that is a pretty big deal because there are only 10 races in the Sioux Chiefs Showdown. So this is kind of the last race before their finale, which will take place at Salem Speedway, I believe sometime next month. So it might be, let me check the schedule here real quick for when that Salem Speedway race is. The race at Salem is actually going to be October the 2nd. So it will be October the 2nd. That will be the season finale for the Sioux Chiefs Showdown. And the race is called the Sioux Chiefs PowerPex 200. And that's when we'll know who is winning the Sioux Chiefs Showdown in the ARCA Menards Series. The season finale for the ARCA Menards Series, they have Bristol Motor Speedway this week. The October 2nd, the Salem Speedway is their next to the last race before their season finale at Cannes Speedway. The races 150 will take place on October the 23rd, and that's when we'll know who the ARCA Menards Series champion is. So 3 finales in a row here, with Bristol Motor Speedway being the finale for the ARCA East, Sioux Chiefs PowerPex 200 at Salem Speedway, the finale for the Sioux Chiefs Showdown, and Kansas Speedway and the Reese's 150, the finale for the ARCA Menards Series. So 3 big races coming up here for the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA East. So joining me now is our co-host for tonight, and that is Sal Segala. How you doing, Sal?
Good, Sharon. Thank you so much.
Okay. We missed you at the beginning of the show.
I was looking at the clock and, excuse me, I think I read the wrong time. I think my clock was very accurate.
Okay, well, we're ready to do the review of the race at Portland. And it was kind of an exciting finish because the drivers that finished first and second ended up getting penalties and did not win the race. So Jake Drew and Eric Nascimento both cut and missed turn two on the final restart. And because of that, they received a penalty and were moved to the back of the pack. And so that left Taylor Gray, who ran third over the finish line, as the race winner. So they have the video up at arcaracing.com if you want to watch it. But it's very clear. Actually, there were three drivers who cut that corner, but the two drivers that were at the front are the two drivers that were hurt the worst with that penalty. And it took the penalty away from Jake Drew and took the win away from Jake Drew and second place away from Eric Nascimento. And it was Taylor Gray that came home with that finish. Have you seen that video yet, Jake? Or, I'm sorry, Sal?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, yeah. It was an exciting finish.
Yeah, it was. I know that Jake felt that he didn't cut the corner. I know I talked to one of his teammates at Irwindale on Saturday, and he said he felt that he got pushed down there and had nowhere to go. But, you know, I don't know if they're going to appeal it or if they're just going to go and just figure, you know what, what's done is done. You know, I'll move on to the next race, which is that All-American Speedway.
That's for the West. Yeah, that's interesting feedback there. Who does he feel push him down there?
Well, he didn't exactly say, but I mean, when you look at the replay, you could see the car, but you know, he just felt, you know, that he was pushed and he had, you know, really had nowhere to go because it was on a restart. But
yeah, it was on a restart.
You know, yeah, and I mean, the call can go both ways, but I mean, at the end, it's always going to be ARCA that's going to have the last say. So it was a tough call for Chris Wright, you know, who's the director of the ARCA series, to make.
Yeah, it is a tough call.
But I mean, you know, he made the right call because, you know, I mean, yeah, he got pushed, but he could have, I don't know, I mean, rules are rules, you know, and that's why they have them. And he wasn't the only one that got penalized. At least the other ones that did it that were with him got penalized too. So it wasn't like Jake or Phil, you know, they were just picking on him.
Right. Yeah, I see how he probably feels that way. And it's a really tough situation to be in, but that is the rule. I think it was the number 99 that pushed him. But, you know, you just can't cut the corner like that and come up in the lead that way. So I can see where ARCA made their call as well and had to make that call. So it was that last lap restart that made all the difference in the world. We'll go over the complete results for the Portland 112. Taylor Gray is the driver that ended up finishing that race. He gets credited with the win. Paul Pedroncelli in the number 33 finished second. Then it was Jesse Love in the number 16 finishing in third place. Joey East finished in fourth place. And Takuma Koga rounds out the top five drivers. The next five are Tim Spurgeon. Then it was Trevor Huddleston, Stafford Smith, Paul Pedroncelli, and Jake Drew comes home with that top 10. Eric Nascimento actually finished in 11th place. So there were a couple of drivers that did have some issues. Caleb Costner was not able to start. Todd Souza had a fuel issue, and Dave Smith also had a fuel issue. Everybody else ended up finishing the race in running. So that's pretty much what we have here for that Portland 112.
Yeah, I'm sure we see. I mean, I think they're going to be showing the replay here in a couple of days. You know, so we'll get a chance to see the, you know, the whole race. You know, and it kind of, then you can kind of see with all the other restarts, you know, what was that a right call to make, or was it just, you know, the wrong call? You know, how many other people did it? If anyone else did it, you know, and then, you know, then you got something to argue about.
I think there were three people
who
did it.
Don't know, but I'm talking about with all the other restarts.
Oh,
you know,
all the other restarts. I gotcha.
Yeah, throughout the day, but it doesn't matter right now. You know what? It's just now it's it just made it tough. It made it tougher for Jake, who's also fighting for, you know, who's fighting for the
He was going after that first win. Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
And the first win.
Now, you mentioned that the broadcast is going to be on NBC Sports Network. That's going to take place Saturday, September the 18th, starting at 9 p.m. Pacific time, but it'll be 12 a.m. Eastern time. So you might want to set your DVRs for this one right now so that you don't miss the action, because that was a very, very exciting race. Disappointment for a few of the drivers here, and Taylor Gray was as surprised as everybody that he ended up with the victory. So let's go ahead and cover the series points for the ARCA one.
Okay, the series points are after six races. It's Jesse Love is leading the points. He's the first. Jake Drews in second, Paul Drenicelli Jr. third, Cole Moores in fourth, Joey East run off the top five. That was definitely a race that Jake needed, you know, to close up that points gap a little bit. And now he has Paul and Cole Moore that are only a point behind him, and then Joey East is only 4 points back. So it's going to make it interesting,
yeah.
You know, what happens these last, you know, these last few races, you know, how he, you know, how he can bounce back and, you know, if Jess can keep that needed, you know, and grab another championship. And then from there, then we go down
indeed.
To Todd. Oh, sorry, Shirk. Todd Tusa will finish sixth.
Okay, go ahead.
Todd Tusa in sixth. Trevor Huddleston in seventh. Takuma Koga eighth. Bridget Burgess ninth, and Bobby Hills Jr. round out the top 10. And actually, they're the 10 drivers that are that haven't missed a race so far this year. So
yeah,
that's
fantastic. 67 points is the point spread from 10th to 1st. Paul Pedroncelli Jr. and Cole Moore in 3rd and 4th are actually tied at 20 points each. So they've got identical stats, except that Paul has a poll award and Cole does not. So that was the tiebreaker for them in the point standings here. But this is going to be really interesting to watch this continue to play out, Sal, because these guys are winding down their series as well. I wanted to pull up the West Series schedule here because we've been kind of covering it for the East and the ARCA Menards Series. They've got on September 23rd, they're going to be racing at the Bull Ring in Las Vegas, the Star Nursery 150. October 9th, they'll be at All-American Speedway for the Napa Auto Parts 150. And then their season finale will be November the 6th. The Phoenix 100 at Phoenix Raceway, and that's going to be on the big stage with the season finale for NASCAR as well. So three more races for the ARCA West.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's going to be an exciting next three races.
It definitely is. We talked about the Busch's Beans 200 for the ARCA East, the ARCA Menards Series, and the Sioux Chief Showdown coming up this weekend. And I mentioned the Star Nursery 150, September 23rd at the Bullring in Las Vegas. That's going to be at 7 p.m. Pacific time. That's 10 p.m. Eastern time. And you can watch the live streaming on TrackPass on NBC Gold's TrackPass service. It's also available via the radio at arcaracing.com. And they also have the Race Central there where they give updates directly from the track of everything that's going on if you want to stay up with what's happening at that race during the event. Now, just a programming note here as well, Jay, or Sal, we are going to be doing a podcast for our Thursday night show because of the races that will be taking place on Thursday night at Bristol Motor Speedway. So we're going to put the podcast together on Wednesday morning. We'll put it out for everybody to listen to sometime early Wednesday afternoon, so that you can hear our preview of those races that will be taking place at Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend. We'll be doing the same thing next weekend. Again, the ARCA West will be racing on a Thursday night, so we are going to be doing a podcast on Wednesday morning again, and again, we'll put it out early on Wednesday so that we can share our preview of all of the races that are taking place that weekend.
Wow, that sounds exciting. A lot to remember when the you know the week starts coming up. You know that you know somebody doesn't call and find out that you're on the wrong show. You know, calling and who knows this number might be a cooking show.
That's why we want to make sure that everybody knows. That it will be a podcast. We'll put it out on Twitter and Facebook so that everybody knows that when the podcast is available. It will be available a day earlier because there is racing that is taking place on those Thursday nights. So, again, we just wanted to make sure everybody knew and keep everybody posted. Okay, so do you have any picks, Sal, for who you think's going to win at Bristol or who you think's going to win the next ARCA West race at Las Vegas?
It's going to be interesting. Jake is on somewhat of a roll. I know Jake has a lot of road course experience. That's why he's able to do as well as he did racing go-karts, but it's going to be – Bill McAnally's cars are hard to beat, but I think if there's someone who can do it, I think it could be Jake Drew. But it's going to be hard because I think that Jesse Love will probably come away with the win. But like I said, anything can happen.
Anything can happen, and we know that's true. What about for the Busch Beans 200? Do you have a favorite to win there? The competition in the ARCA Menards Series is between Ty Gibbs and Coy Hine, but you also got the East season finale, so those guys are going to be racing hard too.
Yeah, Ty Gibbs is hard to beat. I mean, you know, he's on a roll. He's no matter where he's racing at, you know what, he's always a threat. So, I mean, it's going to be hard to bet against Ty Gibbs.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be tough to bet against him. But I know a lot of these drivers are going to be racing as hard as they can out there at Bristol. And, you know, Bristol always comes up with some surprises.
Oh yeah, it's a track that is definitely you gotta put on your bucket list, you know, to watch because you know anything can happen.
Exactly right. Okay, let's go ahead. I know we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but that's probably not going to hurt us. Let's go ahead and get into the Xfinity Series and their last race. I accidentally hit the wrong spot here. Their next race, as I mentioned, is going to be at Bristol Motor Speedway, the Food City 300 at 7:30 p.m. on Friday night, September the 17th. It will be televised on NBC Sports Network and radio coverage from PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. But we want to cover what happened in the race at Richmond Raceway for the Xfinity Series this past Saturday. Noah Gregson makes it two in a row. He led the final 14 laps, holding off the field on a pair of late race restarts on Saturday's Gulf Bowling 250 in the NASCAR Xfinity Series at Richmond Raceway. He celebrated the moment by wrapping himself in an American flag, then climbing the front grandstand fence to a cheering crowd. There was a lot of people cheering for him. With a pair of late restarts, Noah Gregson in the number 9 was able to hold off the field to win the Gold Bowl in 250. It was his second consecutive victory he earned and the first win of this season. His first win came last weekend at Darlington Raceway. On fresher tires, Justin Haley made his way up to the second position, less than 4/10 of a second behind Gregson. John Hunter Nemechek finished in third. Justin Allgaier and Riley Earps round out the top five. The next five drivers were Daniel Hemric, Ty Gibbs, Brandon Brown, Harrison Burton. Jeb Burton made up the top 10. Jeb Burton really rallied from being back in the pack to come home with that top 10 finish. In his lone start of the season in the number 8, Dale Earnhardt Jr., finished in 14th place. There were 15 lead changes among 8 drivers and 9 cautions for 58 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 83.364 miles per hour. For Gregson, it was his fourth victory in 94 Xfinity Series starts, his second victory in 16th top 10 finish this year. And it was also his first victory in 5th top 10 finish in 6 races at Richmond. Justin Haley posted his fourth top 10 finish in 5 races at Richmond and 17th top 10 finish this year. John Hunter Nemechek posted his second top 10 finish in 4 races at Richmond, and Ty Gibbs in 7th place was the highest finishing rookie of the race. This was Junior Motorsports' 6th win in the NASCAR Xfinity Series at Richmond Raceway as well. So any thoughts there on how this race finished, Sal?
Yeah, it was an exciting win, you know, for Noah, you know, for him to pick up, you know, another, you know, pick up back-to-back wins, you know, especially after the season he's been having. I know they had kind of, it was kind of funny that they mentioned that when the 911 attacks happened, Noah was only like 3 years old. So, you know, they're saying, you know, how much of it does he remember? Probably none of it. But, you know, young or old, it doesn't matter. You know what? I mean, it affected everybody of all ages, especially when you start to get older. You know, and you look back at history, you know, this is something, you know, I'm sure, you know, that was taught, you know, while he was going to school, you know, that, you know, when 911 came around, you know, I think it was something, you know, that was spoke about, you know. So, but, you know, it was a good, exciting win for him. You know, Justin Haley, John Hunter Nemechek, you know, were right there. Riley Herbs, you know, to see him, you know, finally, you know, get a good top five finish, you know, after the luck he's been having this season, you know, and, you know, it was a much needed, you know, top five finish for him, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, especially at a truck, you know, as tough as a track, as tough as a Richmond Raceway.
Yes, indeed. I will say there were a few drivers that ran into some incidents. C.J. McLaughlin was involved in an accident. Landon Castle had an ignition problem. Tommy Joe Martin's, he had a couple of accidents that occurred throughout the day, but everybody else finished the race running, so it was a pretty good race. Allmendinger won the first stage, and Ty Gibbs won the second stage of the race, so that was pretty cool to see as well. But Noah Gregson was there at the end, and he's peaking at a really good time, Sal.
Yes, he is. This is the time when you want to be peaking, you know, just see, you know, how far he could, you know, take it, you know, in, you know, once, you know, once their playoffs start, you know, and, you know, if he can, you know, kind of keep this momentum going. Yeah, I kind of expect
exactly.
a little bit more better finish out of A.J. Allmendinger, but, you know, he finished, you know, it is what it is. But you know what? The college motorsports team still continues to flex their muscle, you know, with Justin Haley picking up the second, you know, another second place finish, you know. So, you know, college racing is definitely making their mark in this Xfinity Series.
Yes, they are. It's been really fun watching college racing develop the way that they have. Now, I'm looking at the schedule here for the series, for the Xfinity Series. I believe Bristol Motor Speedway is going to be their season finale, where they crown the regular season champion, and then Las Vegas is where they start their playoff rounds of 12. So this is going to be a big race for the Xfinity Series as well at Bristol Motor Speedway. So that leads right into the point standing.
Yeah, the point standings are, let me get there. Here you go. The point standings are A.J. Allmendinger is still leading the points. Austin Cindric in second. Justin Allgaier in third. Daniel Hamrick in fourth. Harrison Burton fifth. And Noah Gregson round out the top six. Noah kind of picked up a little bit of steam and picked up, you know, some extra playoff points these last couple weeks. You know, now he's up to 13. I remember a few weeks back, I think he only had one or two playoff points, but with
exactly.
these two wins, you know, he's starting to, you know, stack up the points. And, of course, Austin Cindric is still leading the pack with 34, and A.J. Allmendinger is right behind him with 24. Then the next six down is Justin Hayes.
The championship is really between Allmendinger and Austin Cindric, and it's all going to come down to Bristol Motor Speedway and the finishes that they have in that race on Friday night.
Oh yeah, it's going to be definitely a good race to watch, and you know, see how it pans out, you know, for the because Austin Cindric did lead the series, you know, he had the majority of you know, sitting in first, you know, and all of a sudden Allmendinger came in, you know, and snuck in there, you know,
and
took that top spot from him. Yeah, and now there's
only
5 points between
them,
so. So it's going to be a good finale.
It certainly is. Okay, go ahead with your next six.
So the next six is seventh is Justin Haley, eighth is Jeb Burton, ninth is Jeremy Clements, 10th is Brandon Jones, 11th is Riley Herbst, and 12th is Myatt Snyder.
Okay, so that finish really helped Riley move up. He's been riding on the cutoff line, and so now he's in 11th place. So he's given himself a little bit of a cushion.
Yeah, you know, and it almost looks like he almost locked himself in. I mean, he's got 590 points. Of course, we know that. You know, Myatt Snyder is going to go up and on top of him, you know, because of his win.
Mm-hmm.
That'll put Riley in 12th, but Michael Annette is still 66 points behind Riley Herbst. That's a lot of points to make up.
Yeah, and the thing is, NASCAR's already given Michael Annette a waiver if he's able to get into that top 12. So you're right. It's going to be hard to kind of make up those points. It's not impossible, but Michael Annette really needs a win at Bristol.
Oh, yeah.
If
that's,
he wants
that,
to get in.
Exactly. That's for sure. He definitely does need a win. I mean, anything less than a win or a DNF by Riley Early, you know, he's not, Michael Annette ain't going to make it.
So we'll have to see what happens at Bristol Motor Speedway. You know, a lot of different things can happen. And we'll see how it plays out on Friday night for this ARCA or for this Xfinity series. And it's been a fun series to watch. The last few years, I've really enjoyed the Xfinity series and what they're able to do at the track because you've got a lot of really interesting drivers. It was fun seeing Jenna Hunter Nemechek racing in the Xfinity series. They announced that he's going to be racing some more Xfinity Series races. He'll be with Joe Gibbs Racing at Talladega, and he's going to be pretty much sharing that ride with Ty Gibbs for the remainder of this season. Are you still here?
Okay,
I'm not sure what
they're both going to need it. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, sir. I put on mute for a second. But
okay.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know when they get down to the end, especially you know to see where they're going to be at next season. You know, I know that Denham have really said you know what their commitments are, but I mean for Ty Gibbs, you can almost say he's going to be racing full time. You know, with Joe Gibbs Racing in an Xfinity car, especially with the improvements he's had this year. You know, with the wins. You know, then, you know, the way he's dominated the ARCA series. You know, and it's time for him to move up.
It is,
and he's shown he can handle an Xfinity car. It's not like he needs to go do the truck series. You know, first to learn. You know, he's he's proven himself.
That he can race in that Xfinity series and be very competitive. Okay, so this season, so Bristol, Texas, and Phoenix. However, Ty Gibbs is actually going to be in the race at Bristol instead of John Hunter Nemechek because he probably was able to get sponsorship. And Nemechek may not have been able to get that sponsorship. So he'll be racing at Talladega Super Speedway in the truck series. In the Xfinity series. So on the same day, he's going to be competing in the Camping World Truck Series for Kyle Busch Motorsports while he battles for the championship in the truck series. So... it was originally announced he would be at Bristol, but it's actually going to be Ty Gibbs in that car this weekend.
Okay, so then, yeah, so now we know that Ty will be there.
Yeah. So you might remember in June they announced that it was going to be John Hunter in that car. But it's actually going to be Ty Gibbs this weekend for sure. So just an FYI there. Let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series, Sal. Their next race, again, is the Bass Pro Shops NRA Night Race at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time this Saturday, September the 18th. It will be televised on NBC Sports Network with radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. There is no practice or qualifying for them this weekend at Bristol. But I want to make sure we cover the Federated Auto Parts salute to the American Heroes 400 that took place at Richmond this week for the Cup Series. That was on September the 11th in the evening. Martin Truex Jr. received a penalty in the opening lap of the race for crossing the start-finish line in front of pole sitter Denny Hamlin at the green flag. And I'll talk about that in just a little bit, because I watched a video where he talked about that. But 400 laps later, Truex led the field across the line again, this time as the race winner of the Federated Auto Parts 400 salute to first responders at Richmond Raceway. It was a convincing lead, a 1.317-second margin of victory over Joe Gibbs Racing teammates Denny Hamlin and Christopher Bell, who finished in second and third. It was Truex's third win in his last five races at Richmond, his fourth win of the season, and most importantly, it gave him that coveted automatic bid into the next round of the Cup Series playoffs. So he won. The win was the fourth win of the year, his third win at Richmond, and the 31st win of his career. Hamlin finished second, followed by Christopher Bell. Then it was Chase Elliott and Joey Logano rounding out the top five, followed by Larson, Chastain, Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Ryan Blaney to round out the top 10. The pole sitter was Kyle Larson. He was forced to start at the rear because of inspection failures, but he ended up finishing in sixth place. Truex took the lead after the final round of green flag pit stops and led the final 50 laps to win by more than a second. Of the 16 playoff drivers, only one did not finish the race, and that was Kurt Busch. He cut a tire on lap 41, spinning into the outside wall. He ended up finishing 37th, and that was a really bad hit for Kurt Busch. Stage 1 and 2 were both won by Denny Hamlin. There were 21 lead changes among 8 drivers, 5 cautions for 30 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 98.307 miles per hour. It was, again, his 31st victory in 577 Cup Series starts, his 4th victory in 15th top 10 finish this year, his 3rd victory in 14th top 10 finish in 31 races at Richmond. Denny Hamlin posted his 19th top 10 finish in 30 races at Richmond and his 19th top 10 finish this year. Christopher Bell posted his 2nd top 10 finish in 3 races at Richmond. Chase Briscoe, who finished 16th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And Joe Gibbs Racing leads the NASCAR Cup Series in victories at Richmond with 17 wins. That's just incredible. So it covers I think the earliest race I see here is 1999 through this year. So that's amazing that Joe Gibbs Racing has won so many times at that track. Something to keep in mind for your fantasy game for next season, Sal.
Yeah, you know, but you also got to remember, too, Denny Hamlin, this used to be one of his favorite tracks. You know, he always seemed like he was always up front or winning. You know, I don't know how many wins he has here at this track, but I don't whenever it came to Richmond, you know, it's always, you know, like the Denny Hamlin show. So, and I'm sure that's where Joe Gibbs race, you know, picked up, you know, the majority of their race wins, you know, was with Denny Hamlin. But either way, you know,
Hamlin's
what?
Hamlin's got 3 wins.
Yeah. Oh, he does?
Mm-hmm.
But either way, he's he's also peaking at the right time. You know.
That is
so
true.
I mean,
that is true. So that win has to be coming. He got a win last week. So you know, he came home 2nd this week. So yeah, he's definitely peaking at the right time. 2 drivers are locked in for the playoffs. Last week we had so many of the playoff drivers that ran into trouble and ended up finishing outside the top 16 drivers. This week the only driver that had trouble really was Kurt Busch with that cut tire that he had that put him out of the race pretty early. He ended up 37th. Any other comments you want to make about the top, the race results, Sal?
Yeah, that's basically, you know, you basically covered everything, you know what, you know, as far as, you know, what's, you know, what's going on, you know, and what we have to look forward to, you know, in the coming, you know, the coming weeks as far as our, you know, the, you know, drivers that are, you know, that are in the chase, you know, and making it eligible, you know, they're, but Joe Gibbs Racing is really putting on a, you know, they're really coming in strong. Even Chris Bell, you know, with his, you know, with his finish.
Mm-hmm.
But Kyle Busch is still having, I don't know what's up with Kyle. I'm sure. I mean, he needs a win. Yeah, he needs a win this week.
Yeah, let's go over the series point standings because you're right. There's a few drivers that are kind of below the cut line at this point. And this is an elimination race at Bristol Motor Speedway. So four drivers are going to go home outside of the round of 12 drivers.
Okay, so far leading the points is Kyle Larson. In second is Denny Hamlin. Third is Martin Truex Jr. Fourth is Joey Logano. Fifth is Ryan Blaney. Sixth is Kevin Harvick, who's still holding on without a win and still alive in the chase. And then Chase
mm-hmm.
Elliott is seventh, and Christopher Bell rounds out the top eight of the top 16 drivers, you know, that are making up the chase. But like you said, four of them are going to be eliminated, you know, after this weekend.
Okay, so the bottom eight drivers.
And then the bottom eight is ninth is Brad Keselowski, 10th is Kyle Busch, 11th is Eric Almirola, 12th is Kurt Busch, 13th is Alex Bowman, 14th is Tyler Reddick, 15th is William Byron. And sitting in the Jeff Gordon number 16 spot is Michael McDowell. For all you that don't remember, Jeff Gordon's last season, NASCAR opted to add an extra spot in the chase so Jeff Gordon could make it. So I kind of call that last spot the Jeff Gordon spot.
Okay. Kyle Larson's got a whopping 53 playoff points that are kind of carrying him into that lead. He took Denny Hamlin's 24 points behind. It wouldn't be enough to make up for the 53 points that he has in playoff points. But his 23 playoff points are what's helping him maintain that second spot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's man, that's a lot of playoff points. And then, you know, second with the playoff points, you know, of course, is Martin Truex, you know, and we see what happened to Truex the last two seasons. You know what? How he used to rack up the points, you know, the
mm-hmm.
you know the playoff points. You know, once he grabbed that first race win, and he knew he was locked in the chase. Then they're focusing on as many playoff points as they can get throughout the rest of the season.
Yes, and they get those with wins and with stage points, stage wins. So this is going to be, again, this is a do-not-miss weekend of racing. We've talked about all the different, the season finale for the ARCA East, points-paying races for the ARCA Menards Series and the Suit Chief Showdown as well. We've got the Xfinity Series. This is going to be their season finale where we finally determine who is the regular season champion in that series. And in the Cup Series, four drivers are going to be eliminated. So this is a super big weekend of racing for the NASCAR and ARCA Menards Series.
Oh, yeah. It's even a bigger weekend for Michael McDowell, William Byron, Tyler Reddick, and Alex Bowman, who are sitting at the bottom of the
mm-hmm.
who are sitting at the bottom of the food chain right now, and you know, looking to get eliminated.
Yeah, And some of those drivers, I don't think we expected to be in that group. So a little bit of a surprise for Hendrick Motorsports, who seemed to be so strong there for a while. They were winning race after race after race, coming home with 1, 2, 3, 4 finishes. And yet two of the drivers are kind of in trouble now, and they need a win very badly in order to stay in this. Another point of note, Kurt Busch and Alex Bowman are actually tied in that 12th and 13th spot. So Kurt Busch is in a little bit of trouble here as well.
Yeah, you know, and Alex Bowman, it seemed like he was going to, you know, he might have been one, you know, maybe to advance to the, you know, to the second round, especially, you know, he had the three wins. He was, you know, he was having some good consistent
mm-hmm.
finishes. You know, now here he is, you know, just three wins and getting ready to get eliminated. But, yeah, you look at Kevin Harvick, who did get a win the whole season, and, you know, and he's, you know, he's solidly in for the next round.
Yes, he is. He's really done a good job. Even though he hasn't had wins, he's been consistently up front, and it has definitely paid off for him with that sixth place in the series point standings at this point. So these guys are all praying that they have no issues going into Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend. It is going to be a huge, huge race for this Cup Series. Saturday night under the lights. And again, we're going to have all of our racing done between the Truck Series, who's racing on Thursday night. Real quick, we've got some time here now. Let's go ahead and cover the Truck Series real quick. The next race for the Truck Series is the Food City. Do I have the right thing here? No, that's Xfinity. Hold on. Okay. The next race for the Truck Series is the UNOH 200 at Bristol Motor Speedway at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday, September the 16th. So that will be live on Fox Sports 1 with radio coverage on MRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. Again, no practice or qualifying, so that's going to make it that much more interesting to see what happens here. But another huge, huge event for the Truck Series. The Truck Series, I don't think... Let me look at the schedule here for the Truck Series real quick. I don't think this is an elimination race for them, but I might be wrong. The round of 10. Okay. Oh, it is an elimination race. So this is going to be an elimination race for the Truck Series too. So you've got two elimination races taking place this weekend, so... They're
yeah.
going to lose two
yeah.
drivers out of the round of 10. So let's cover the points there for the Truck Series real quick because these guys are, the drivers' points. These guys are going to eliminate two drivers. So who are the drivers that are in trouble going into Phoenix this weekend? Or not Phoenix, but Bristol.
Boy. You got Austin Hill, Zane Smith, and Chandler Smith.
Two drivers. Only two drivers will be eliminated.
Only two. But when you look at the points, they're pretty well close between Carson Hocevar, Austin Hill, Zane Smith, Chandler Smith. So there's only 15 points between Chandler Smith and Carson Hocevar. But between Austin Hill, Zane Smith, and Chandler Smith, there's only there's 7 points between Zane Smith and Chandler Smith. So, depending on how they finish and where they race, I mean, you know, it, you know.
And
it,
only
it could,
5 points between Austin Hill and Zane Smith. So that's pretty tight. Yeah, that's pretty tight. But who's at the top? Let's go from the bottom down, or top down.
So leading the points is still Sheldon Creed. Second is John Hunter Nemechek. Third is Matt Crafton. Fourth is Stuart Friesen. And Ben Rhodes round out the top five. John Hunter Nemechek, even though he had a bad race, his last race out, but still he's got that 50 playoff points, which is double Sheldon Creed, who, you know, who's second with, you know, 24 playoff points. So John Hunter Nemechek with all those
points.
No, I'm talking about with all those playoff points. John Hunter Nemechek, he almost locked himself into, as far as the point. But John Hunter Nemechek already knows he's going to the next, you know, into the next round with all the points he has.
Right. And I believe John Hunter Nemechek is clinched, too.
Yeah. And then from there, then you go to Sheldon Creed, too. He just had the last race win, too.
Mm-hmm.
So Sheldon Creed is already in. And then from there, then you go to sixth is Todd Gilliland. Todd Gilliland. Seventh is Carson Hosovar. Eighth is Austin Hill. Ninth is Zane Smith. And tenth is Chandler Smith.
So this race is going to determine Thursday night's race was an elimination race, and two of those drivers will not advance to the round of eight. So this is going to be an exciting event to watch as well. And you'll want to watch those drivers that are on that cut line and as to how that changes throughout the race, because these guys are going to be racing hard to stay in to the best of their ability.
Oh, yes, they are. You know they are. They're going to be, they're going to be fighting tooth and nail. Plus they want the win. You know, sure, they want to finish as best they can, but they also want to win and to keep racking up those playoff points.
Absolutely. Okay, now, Sal, we've got a guest that's going to be coming on here shortly, Dean Thompson. Let's talk about him. I know he's won his second championship at Irwindale Speedway recently. So what else do we need to know about Dean Smith or Dean Thompson?
Yeah, we had him on the show. We had him on the show a couple times last year. We had him on after he won his first championship, and then we had him on when he picked up one of his wins at Irwindale in the Pro A division. And on Saturday, we had our championship night just for the prolates. And Dean had a decision to make before going into the race on Saturday. He is racing in the ARCA Menards West Series. He's racing for High Point Racing in the 51 car, and they raced at Portland on Saturday. So they're trying to figure out a way to get him to race, get him to the airport, and then from the airport, fly him out here to L.A., get him in the car at Irwindale, so this way he could still, you know, battle for the points in the ARCA Menards West Series and, you know, and still, you know, wrap up his championship over here. Well, the logistics just weren't going to – it wasn't going to play out the way they wanted to, so he ended up choosing, you know, the championship over the, you know, over the opportunity, you know, to race at, you know, Portland on the road course over there. And course it was a good choice because, you know, he ended up getting
very good,
you know, his back-to-back championships. Yes,
absolutely. Well, he's here now. I'm going to bring him into the queue if you want to go ahead and introduce him and start off with the interview.
All right, our guest for tonight is Dean Thompson, who races for High Point Racing. He's sponsored by Thompson Pipe Group, which also happens to be the company that his dad owns. And he's racing full-time in the Spears SRL Southwest store, and he's racing full-time in the ARCA Menards Series West Series. So he has his plate full this year and traveling from track to track, from city to city, you know, to make all this happen. But like I said earlier, you know, he had to make a decision. And let's welcome Dean to the show. Welcome to the show, Dean. And kind of tell us about how the decision came about and why you chose the late model championship over the ARCA Menards West Series.
Glad to be here, Sal. Appreciate the invitation. Yeah, I mean, it was a decision made by not just by me, by the kind of people. It wasn't an easy one, obviously, because, you know, we're committed to the Arkham Menards Series West, and we're also committed to the Irwindale Championship, and we missed Irwindale with COVID, and that was pretty heartbreaking because that was supposed to be my redemption race, but missed that. That threw us out of the points for Rookie of the Year, and then threw us out of the points for the championship. So we were looking at what to do, and we just decided if we're going to go for something, we're going to go for a championship, and we decided that Irwindale Speedway would offer that. So we went for Irwindale, and what do you know, we won it. So I'm pretty happy with that decision. I know some people don't believe that was the right one, but frankly, I think and my team thinks that was the best decision.
You know, when you go back and think about the decision, you know what, it's like you said, it's not an easy one, you know, because, you know, you did have commitments at both, you know, in both series. But, you know, it comes down to, I think, in my opinion, it comes down to what's going to look better on your resume, you know, as, you know, one thing. Another thing is, you know what, you know, it was a hard-fought battle to win the Irwindale Championship because Trevor had picked up some fire there for a while, you know, and was, you know, started winning a bunch of races in a row. But then, you know, when you look at the Arkham Menards Series, you know, it was kind of like, you know, you were on a roll in that series. You know what, you were having good finishes. But, you know, and in the end, you know what, it doesn't matter what anyone else says. It matters, you know, what Dean Thompson wanted and what High Point Racing wanted. It's obviously you guys made the right decision because, you know, getting back-to-back Irwindale late model championships, it's not an easy task.
No, absolutely not. I appreciate you saying that. Yeah. I agree. I always, mainly the reason why we chose Irwindale was to look for the resume, you know. We're not a road course racer. And I'll accept that. I'm not a road course phenom like Jake. So I wasn't expecting to win Portland. I was going to go into it with high hopes, not amazing, not very high expectations because I've never been there, you know. At least at Sonoma, I was there with the Miata to test, but didn't have very high expectations, but I had a lot of hopes. But when it came down to the decision, I ultimately thought, okay, what's going to look better for the what's going to look better for the DGRs or the GMSs or the Venturinis of the world, you know? Was it going to be an average finish or a pretty decent finish at Portland, or is it going to be a championship? And ultimately we came down with a back-to-back championship, and I think that was the right move.
You know, and then to cap the championship on the 20th anniversary of, you know, of the 911 attacks, you know, and everything that Tim put into that program on Saturday night, you know, with the pre-race, you know, the moment of silence, you know, all the firemen that came out, you know, the helicopter and, you know, of course, the post-race fireworks and, you know, just everything that culminated into that event, you know, then you know, gaining the championship, you're burnt out, you know, climbing the fence. I mean, it was like, I mean, you could script a better movie or a better ending than what happened on Saturday night.
No, you're right. I mean, I could probably scripted it better with back-to-back wins that night, but the car was struggling. Wish we could have won them both to the fans and won the championship, but we did what we could. We were there when we needed to be, and we gapped enough to where we were able to clinch it. That's not the way I want to win it without Jake there, without Trevor there, but you know what? I played the game. That's how you got to win these things. These things aren't easy to come across, you know. Like Chase Elliott, in the Cup Series, you know. He played the game and he won it, you know. It was the Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin show all year, but Chase pulled it off because he played the game. And I was there to play the game and I won. So, ended up how it ended up, and I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah, you should be. It was a well-deserved championship. Like I said, it was a battle all season, you know, between you, Jake, and Trevor, you know, then. But, you know, like I said, an Irwindale championship isn't easy to come by. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sharon, our host. I know she has a few questions for you, too.
Hi, Dean.
Hi, Sharon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here tonight. We appreciate you taking the time to be on the show. We've seen you compete in the ARCA series and have some pretty good runs, actually. But I agree. I think you made the right decision by going after your back-to-back championships. As you think back over the 2 years that you've won the championships, what are the highlights for you over those 2 years?
Man, that's an amazing question, Sharon. It's got to be my my first sweep. That was pretty substantial. Sweeping the whole night, winning both races, beating Christian McGee. That was pretty big for me. My first win back from COVID, the first win back, that was awesome. I know how to shake the rust off, but we were there and we won it. And I'll admit, this season was rough. This season wasn't easy at all. Not a lot of highlights, I'll admit. But I will say the highlight of when I won and the fireworks are going crazy and my girlfriend was there, I mean, that was just a dream come true. Having everyone there, I mean, that was pretty nuts on how, you know, how it all folded out with Trevor wrecking, and that's not how I want to win. I want to pass Trevor and
sure.
win it. But like I said, these things are so hard to come around that you got to take what you get, you know. And obviously my two championships, those are the best highlights I can come up with. I'm sure there's tons more I can think of, but the top five of those.
Well, they are huge accomplishments, Dean. And then I want to also put a little bit of focus on your team because you're the driver that kind of is the face of the team, but there's a lot of people mm-hmm. that support you. So let's kind of talk about who those people are.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I couldn't do this without everyone who supports me. I mean, this is not a single player sport, you know. This is probably one of the biggest team sports in all of sports that people don't realize. I mean, all the High Point guys, Ryan Partridge, all of them, they've been a massive, massive help in my career in these past 3 years. Thompson Pipe Group. Super thankful for them. Gotta thank Ford Performance and Haas Racing Development. They've been there for me since day one. They've been very, very helpful with all their support. Lucas Oil, all of them. They've been fantastic. My mom, my dad, my sister, brother, my girlfriend, all my friends who watch me, and especially the fans. The fans have been a big, big, big support. Another highlight, this isn't about the late models, but another highlight was when I got second at the ARCA race, and I was pretty devastated. But as soon as NBC walked over to me, all the whole crowd, it seemed like, was cheering, 51, 51. So that was pretty heartwarming to feel that I was the people's champion. So,
yes, that has to be pretty fantastic. And then you mentioned family. Family is just so important in racing. You mentioned the fact that it's such a huge team sport, and a lot of fans don't realize the number of people that are behind the scenes that are helping put this together. But I think one of the most important people behind the scenes that don't always get recognition is your family, because they make a lot of sacrifices for you. And, that's nice that you pointed out that, not just your mom and dad, but your brothers and your sisters and your girlfriend and the sacrifices that they make. And they're just as happy as you are when you win. It's a win for the whole family.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, when I say that the championship was won, I don't say I won the championship. I say we won the championship, you know. This isn't about just me, you know. This is about everyone that was involved. We are the champions, not me. You know, it's me, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister, my girlfriend, all my dogs. You know, we're all the champions. You know, like, this is.
I love it.
They're all a big support system in my life, and I'm so grateful for them. So blessed to have them.
Yes, I think that's fantastic, Dean. And I remember your second place finish in the Arkham Menards series. You know, are you going to be able to come back now that you're done with this sponsorship, with the championship? Are you now going to be able to race more in the Arkham Menards now?
Yes, the plan all along was to race the full season. If I'll be honest, if I made Irwindale, if I was there at the last ARCA Irwindale race, the decision probably would have been to race Portland, because I had a really good feeling from the beginning of the season when we raced at Phoenix that we were going to be running for this championship. But unfortunately, got a different plan, and we got COVID, and life changed pretty drastically right there and then.
Right. Right. So, well, we're looking forward to watching your race again in the Arkham Menards series. I'm going to pass the baton back over to Sal, because I know he has some more questions for you, too.
Thank you, Sharon.
Okay,
Dean,
thank you.
You know what? You know, actually, this year brought on another different challenge. You made the move to Texas, so now you're having to not only, you know, travel to the different Arkham Menards series races, but now Irwindale isn't just an hour drive away. Now it's a, you know, a plane flight away, you know, along with the tour race, you know, when they visit Kern, they visit Irwindale, you know, now it's, you know, having to, you know, fly back and forth. So that right there adds a whole new challenge, you know, as far as, you know, getting to the different venues. How much of a toll has it taken on you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm blessed to be able to live in Texas. I've always wanted to live here my whole life. But the toll hasn't been substantial. I love living here, and I love racing in California. So I'm super thankful to be racing in general, you know. So if I had to make the sacrifice to fly to California and make a two-hour time change to race cars, I'm just fine with that. It's, I mean, that's no big deal to me. Just to even race these cars is a blessing. I'd fly tens of hours if I needed to.
So let's go back to the celebration on Saturday night. You know, you opted, you know, for the burnout, and then of course, you know, you went up to the fence, you know, something, you know, that you haven't done in the past, you know, and you did your burnout there. You know, then of course, you know, you climbed the fence afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, that was all in the heat of the moment kind of thing. You know what? I was so excited. I started doing the burnouts, and I thought, you know what? Let's give the fans a little appreciation burnout. And I went out to the fence, started burning it out for them. And originally, the plan was for me to burn it down, like, smoke it so much that like all the smoke would just, you know, drape my car, and I'd get out, and when the smoke would disappear, I'd be right there. But tried to sit the second, didn't work out very well. So I just stopped right there, hopped out of the car, and gave everyone a big hug. We were living on time, and so I did what I could, but it was so much fun celebrating.
So going into the night, you know, you guys have, of course, you know, you practice Friday night, you know, then you know, your practice on Saturday. It didn't look like the car was, you know, it wasn't, you know, to your liking. What does Ryan Parkridge tell you before you go out for the first race? You know, what kind of advice does he give you? You know, he knows, you know, the championship is there, but like you said, you know, I'm sure you guys talked about, you know, wanting to go back-to-back wins, you know, along with the championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think our car was struggling in different areas. But it's all a big mental game. When your car is not working right, you just got to keep the right mindset, keep your head down, and drive it as hard as you can, you know, without ruining the car, without burning the tires down every lap. You got to drive smart, got to drive clean, got to drive good. You got to finish I don't want to finish first. My first finish is what Tim always tells me. So Ryan always tells me good luck, keep your head down, and drive smart. You know, because we were in contention to clinch the championship on the first race, which we did. And he said you don't need to do anything crazy. Don't need to be crazy aggressive. You know, run your race, run clean, and we'll clinch this championship.
You know, and actually that's another thing you had going for you too. You know, racing with High Point, you know, is you have Tim Huddleston, who has multiple championships there. You got Ryan Partridge, who has multiple championships. You know, it seemed like the only thing missing was, you know, and I'm sure Jeff Schrader probably gives you a lot of input, you know, also too, you know, but missing Jeff, you know, since he was up at Portland with the Arco and Ards West Series.
Right. Yeah, that was it's a missing piece in our puzzle to our team. But, you know, when that happens, you just gotta work through it. You know, you can't let it sit there and, you know, worry and be upset about it. You've got to work through it, you know. And it's a missing piece to our puzzle, but we figured it out and we were the champion.
Well, Dean, you know what? Is there any shout-outs you want to give, you know, as far as your team or sponsors before we close out the segment?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I mean, Tom's Pipe Group, High Point Racing, Sport Performance, Haas Racing Development, my whole family, mom, dad, brother, sister, my girlfriend, my dogs, all my friends who continue to support me week in and week out, watch all the races, and all the fans who showed up. I mean, I missed them so much last year. I mean, can you believe that? 5 wins last year, and there was no one there to watch it in the stands. That sucked. That absolutely sucked. I'm glad I was able to win once and win the championship with them.
Well, Dean, I'm sure this comes from me and Sharon. You know what? Good luck the rest of the season. With the last year race at the Arco and Ards Series. You know what? And of course, we still have actually 2 more SRL Southwest Tour races. We got Roseville coming up this weekend, and then we have our finale next month in Kern County Raceway. So that looks like it puts like at least 5 more races, you know, up on your schedule, you know, before you close out the season. So we just want to wish you luck, you know, in the rest of the season, and you know, whatever plans you have for next year, if you give me a text, and then you know, we'll go to get you back on. You know, we'll talk about your, you know, once you get. You know, all your stuff once you get all your ducks in a row for next season, and then we'll get you back on and we'll talk about all that. How does that sound?
Sounds great. Sounds good to tell. I appreciate you guys bringing me on. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, not a problem.
We enjoyed
Thank
it,
you,
too.
And, go ahead, Sharon.
Guys.
I just said we enjoyed it as well.
Oh, okay.
Great talking
Thank
to you.
It was a lot of fun. All right.
All right, that was Dean Thompson with High Point Racing, a 2-time champion at Irwindale Speedway, and really huge, huge championships for him. Busy, busy season with the SRL, the Arco Menards Series West, and, you know, the Pro Late Model Series there at Irwindale. You mentioned that he moved to Texas. What part of Texas did he move to, Phil?
Gosh, Sharon, you know what? Good question.
Oh, okay. I was just curious.
You know what? I'm pretty sure they moved close to where, because his dad has 2 offices. They have one over here in Rialto, California, and I know they have one in Texas because his uncle Kevin, who used to race super late models here at Irwindale, he raced in Madera. Kevin used to race all over California too back in the day. And I know Kevin used to fly out from Texas to come out here and race. This was back, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, somewhere around there. So,
Yeah, as you know, I've got family down there, so I was just curious to know if he was in the same area. But we'll get that information the next time we talk to him. But he's a fun conversation, and I love that he even gives credit to his dogs, because dogs are a big part of the family, and I get it. I think that's fantastic.
I mean, they are. I mean, when you think about them, you know, we have one over here. And I tease Sandy sometimes. I said, man, I said, you show the dog more love than me. You know, I said, the dog, you walk in and, oh, you, yeah, I said, I walk in and you, you know, when we both walk in, when I walk in, you kind of like, hi, how was your day? And then when we walk in, the dog jumps on you, you fall to your knees. I said, and, you know, you practically strangle the dog. And I'm sitting there looking and going, man, this, we're watching TV and the dog walks over here and you hug it and pet it and come here, I'll give you some love. I said, I'm sitting here watching the TV and you just sit there and your
poor
eyes
Sal.
Are filled on the TV. So,
poor Sal, I feel bad for you, Sal. Because I've got my puppy dog now too, and I tell you, I'm really crazy about her too. So it's a tough position to be in.
Yeah, it is. But
so,
oh well, you know what?
Now you were at the racetrack this weekend too, right?
Yeah, I was over there. I was. It was a toss up. I had a chance to go to Portland. I had a few drivers ask me. And then I know Dean was running for the championship and I didn't know if there was going to be a photographer there to cover, you know, all his, you know, all his photos.
Did
and,
you take that
so
shot
I,
of him facing the crowd? And yeah. Okay. So that's a Sal Sicala photo of Dean Thompson when he's kind of engaging with the crowd and enjoying the championship victory.
Yeah, so it was neat. You know what? And then Irwindale was my home track. You know, I kind of feel bad, you know, when I would show up there and I'd do other races. But sometimes, you know, for reasons that I'm not going to talk about, you know, I have to do the other series, you know, before I could come here. But actually, you know, I've made a lot of sacrifices to, you know, to come over to Irwindale. You know, I'm always there to support Tim. You know, and the whole
mm-hmm.
gang there at Irwindale, you know, we're like one big family there. So, you know, it's nice, you know, to go there. But then anywhere I go, it's family. You know, everybody, you know, that I come in contact with, they're all family. But Irwindale is just, it's nice because it's close to home, 10 minutes. You know, I don't have to fly
mm-hmm.
over there and drive 7 hours. You know, I drive 10 minutes and I'm there and sleep in my own bed. And, oh, yeah, it's nice. But I love that track. And Tim is doing so much.
That's a huge track out there on the West Coast, and a lot of drivers, it's prestigious to win a championship at Irwindale Speedway. But you've got a lot of tracks out there in California that are really nice tracks. He's racing the SRL this year, too, so.
Yeah, we're up in All-American Speedway this weekend, which is Bill McAnally's track from BMR Racing. That's
mm-hmm.
Bill's track, so we'll be up in Bill's neck of the woods this weekend. But yeah, like you said, a championship at Irwindale, it just comes with a lot of prestige because when that track first opened, NASCAR dubbed it, you know, the miniature Daytona 500, you know, track, and NASCAR just, they did so much for it. It was a state of the art, and you know, the drivers that came out of that track. I mean, I go on and on the list, you know. Most notably, of course, is David Gilliland. Yeah, David Gilliland is, you know, probably one of the, you know, but I mean, just the.
Well, David,
I mean,
and his son, Todd.
Yeah, David and Todd. Yeah, but the Haley Deegan even raced, did a season, couple seasons up here, and Brad Deegan did some races. Travis Pastrana, his very first stock car race was out here at Irwindale. Joy Logano, Bubba Wallace has made stops over here. You know, we've had, gosh, I mean, the
Kevin Harvick.
Goes on and on and on.
Michael Walker.
Kevin Harvick, Cole Custer raced a couple seasons over here, you know, before
mm-hmm.
going to race NASCAR full time. And, gosh, I mean, plus the elite from the short track world, you know, that, you know, if you follow short track racing for years and years, you would know names like Rip Michaels, Nick Joannides, Sean Woodside, Ron Esau, you know, I mean, gosh, Ron Hornaday,
yep.
you know, I mean, it just goes on and on. You know, these guys are all just icons. You know, when you talk about, you know, short
you
track
know
racing, Trevor Huddleston.
Ryan Partridge. What I love, too, is that a lot of these drivers are helping the next set of drivers develop their skills now. You mentioned Ryan Partridge with Dean Thompson, and, you know, we were talking to another driver a week or so ago that worked with Derek Thorne. So
yeah,
it's
that was
so
Jason
good to
Walbridge.
See those drivers. Yes.
Oh, it's so nice to see...
Those
Ryan
drivers
is a huge
helping
fixture at Irwindale. Yeah. I mean, Ryan is helping. His brother is racing what they call the spec late models. And Ryan's
mm-hmm.
helping his brother Andy Partridge. But, I mean, Ryan is always – he's always got his hands in somebody over there, you know, helping him out, you know. And,
yeah,
you know, and
I
it's amazing. He even helps out Trevor still, you know. Ryan is always
yep.
there to help any driver that needs help. Ryan is always ready to step in, you know what, and give him
yep.
tips and pointers, you know what, and he's even stepped in when we've had drivers that have been injured, and Ryan has stepped in, you know, into the seat just so they can get the points, you know what, and Ryan's always ready
yeah.
to. Plus he runs a racing school over here at Orindale Speedway too.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
I think that's fantastic. I like seeing drivers give back that way and still, you know, it's a way for them to still be involved in the racing in a huge way by helping these new drivers and developing their skills. So I just think it's fantastic. We got to think about – I know you said Derek's going to come on here sometime soon. We should think about getting Ryan back on too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if we can get Ryan back on, it won't be hard. Just give him a phone call away. And I know he'd like to come back on and talk about, you know, what he's doing, you know, how involved he is, you know, with racing still at Irwindale. Like I said, he's running the racing school, so,
mm-hmm.
you know, that keeps him busy, you know. So he's helping everybody that comes to that school, you know. And,
yeah, that's,
you know, and,
that's fantastic.
It's amazing, I mean, where they find the time to do all this.
Exactly, because these guys have full-time jobs, too. Where are you going to be this weekend, Sal? What racetrack?
I'll be at Roseville with the Spears SRL Tour.
Okay. And hopefully we'll get a winner from the race?
Yeah, well, so far, Derek doesn't, like I said, he doesn't want to come on yet. He wants to wait. He said he'll do a preview, a snowball derby preview, so... you know, I told him, I said, you owe me that. I said, actually, you owe me every week that you win. So when I see on Saturday after he wins, you know, when he wins, you know, I tell him, do you owe you? He goes,
that's
I know.
That's a lot
I
of times.
It's just he's
you
really
know,
busy
watched,
with all the – go ahead.
I was going to tell you, I watched a Southwest Tour race this weekend on MAV TV, and Derek Thorne was in it, and, man, he makes – some amazing moves. Just when you think he's kind of out of it, he comes back and makes those passes. It's just incredible to watch him race.
Yeah, he's a master out there. I'll tell you that. You know, he's one of the most respected, I think, drivers out there. You know, I've talked to a lot of different people of, you know, they talk about him. You know, and even some of the older drivers, the older car owners. You know, they talk
yeah.
about, you know, the way Derek, you know, the way he can just pick a field apart, you know, without, you know, sometimes not even giving 100%. He's at 85%.
Yeah.
But, you know, he saves his car, and if he needs it, he knows where his car is going to be at the end. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like when we talked to Jane and Walbridge, you know, about, you know, learning the car,
yeah.
you know, knowing what the car can do, knowing what the everything that the car is going to do. You know, that's how you
well,
get to
like
that.
Well, like Dean talked about, too, keeping your nose down.
yeah.
You know, when something
oh, yeah.
happens, don't let it get to you. Keep your nose down and keep racing. So
that's
all
how Ryan
really,
is.
Really good advice.
Oh,
yep.
yeah, Ryan knows
yep.
every inch of the car. I mean, it's amazing when you talk to Ryan and, you know, you talk about a car, you know, setups, you know, what it does and what it doesn't do. And Ryan is that's why Ryan was so successful when he raced out here, because Ryan knew exactly what his car was doing, what he needed to do, and what adjustments he needed to make, and that's why he was able to, you know, find all the success that he did.
Well, we'll look forward to that. And Sal, as always, I had a good time on the show with you tonight, and we'll look forward to doing this again next Monday night.
All right. Good night, everyone. Everyone have a safe weekend. We will talk to you next weekend.
Okay. Take care, Monday. Safe travels. So next Monday night.
All right. Next Monday night. Rain or shine.
Exactly. 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Take care.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right. We are at the top of the hour, and it is now time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And joining me for that, I believe I've got Andy here. Is that you, Andy?
It is indeed, Sharon. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And looking forward to our hot topics here tonight. So far, you're the only one who's joined us. Jay's probably frantically trying to get things here on the show. I know sometimes he runs just a little bit late. But I don't think Mike's going to make it, and I guess Tommy can't make it, and neither can Owen. So right now it's just you and me, bud.
That's okay. We'll see what we can talk about, and we'll wait for Jay's arrival. I'm sure he'll be along soon. Sounded like he would be on for the Hot Topic segment tonight, so we'll certainly look forward to that. Sharon, if you don't mind me starting off, we can – I kind of wanted
Not
to talk about the four – The wanted to talk about the four drivers below the cut line. Obviously, we go into a cutoff race at Bristol this weekend. So kind of wondering what your thoughts are on these drivers and what their likelihood of advancing is.
Well, yeah, it's really amazing what happened to Kurt Busch this weekend at Richmond. I kind of felt really bad for him because it just happened out of nowhere. Where he hit that wall, and that was a hard hit as well. Just to kind of give some background here, the four drivers, I'm going to go from the bottom up. Michael McDowell in that 16th spot. Then it's William Byron, surprisingly enough. I would have guessed that. Tyler Reddick in 14th spot, and Alex Bowman in that 13th spot. But what's amazing is that he's actually tied with Kurt Busch, who's in the 12th spot, but 98 points back. So Eric Almirola is not too far away from them. He's 95 points back, so just 3 points difference between him and Eric Almirola. Kyle Busch, I know, wasn't happy with his race. Those drivers are all looking for a win, I think, when we go to Bristol Motor Speedway. Kurt Busch is really good there, so I kind of see him as being a driver who can kind of rally back at Bristol Motor Speedway. A little shocked to see the Hendrick Motorsports cars in this situation, considering they had that spree there where nobody could beat the Hendrick Motorsports car. So it's a surprise to see them kind of in this spot. But of those drivers, I do see Kurt Busch being the driver that can rally back. We'll see what happens with William Byron and Alex Bowman. I'll put them next on that list. But what are your thoughts? First, let me see real quick here. Yeah, Jay's here now. We'll let Jay kind of chime in before we go back to you. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. Lost a little bit of track of time there. Apologize for being late. I caught the tail end of your statement. I know we're talking about the bottom four of the cut line. What exactly was the topic there?
That is the topic, the bottom four of the drivers going into Bristol. And who do you see that may not make it, or who do you see that might be able to pull themselves out of this and survive?
Well, I think when you look at it, not just about talent drivers, start with the points itself. I know you mentioned Kurt Busch and Alex Bowman are tied in points, so obviously that's a one-on-one situation. I think Michael McDowell, obviously, and we kind of knew this going into the postseason, he was pretty much going to have to win to advance. I think William Byron is now really, really close, if not already there, of half to win. The other two there, you mentioned Kurt Busch, Alex Bowman. The points there actually could be settled on the track without even having a real bad race. A top five versus a top 20 for them could actually change that up. And I'm trying to, while I'm talking about this, pull up the point standings. But there's a small enough gap in points where it could be settled on the track through the stages, through the bonus points, and not even come down to a bad finish, just not a good finish. So I think right now William Byron and Michael McDowell, I feel, really are in a have-to-win situation in order to advance. Everybody else, and I know you said it, I think Kurt Busch you have to look at probably being one that could clearly win. We know his history at Bristol Motor Speedway, so I think is in the best position. Alex Bowman kind of been on that, I don't want to say slump, because it's not that they've been running terribly bad, but this point in the season, top 15s may not cut it. So I think you have to put Kurt Busch up, then you move Alex Bowman maybe back. The other two, like I said, I think they're kind of in a have to win, and I don't know that either one of them, I know McDowell's run good there before, but not on a regular basis. So I think they're the ones looking at the hard have-to-win situation.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the case in those situations. But, Andy, what are your thoughts?
Well, for me, you know, taking a look at the standings here, I think it's a bit of a surprise for some of those drivers below the cut line. Certainly, to Jay's point, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, we expected the 34 to be above the cut line, you know, certainly had a chance, but I'm not sure that's a surprise. But William Byron and Alex Bowman, certainly, you know, with the dominance of Hendrick Motorsports this season, for those two drivers to find themselves below the cut line in only the first round is a bit of a surprise to me. And certainly either one is capable of running up front and turning that around this weekend, but so isn't, you know, the drivers in front of them. If you look at the next four above the cut line, Keselowski, Busch, Almirola, and Kurt, both the Bushes, you know, that's not a – those drivers are no slouches, especially when it comes to Bristol. Even Eric Almirola, I think, whom many expected to be eliminated in the first round, tends to run fairly well at Bristol, so it's not going to be an easy hill to climb for anyone below the cut line. You know, Tyler Reddick, I think that they somewhat overachieved to get into the playoffs. Certainly Reddick is a talented driver, but when you consider the overall performance of RCR this season, certainly for them to be in the playoffs is a plus. But, you know, so I think if I have to analyze this and say, who do I think are the surprises to be below the cut line entering a cutoff race, it would be Bowman and Byron, the two that aren't a surprise, Reddick and McDowell. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. We all know how Bristol can be, and certainly, you know, putting it as a cutoff race in the first round has made it, you know, even more important to go there and be aggressive and push hard to try to win. And who's to say we don't see some kind of an upset? I know it's unlikely, but you never know. And we could see, you know, someone knocked out in the first round that we just didn't expect to. And you know, that, you know, any Hendrick car would be knocked out in the first round to me is a surprise. And I think the odds of both of those cars advancing and knocking out someone in front of them is probably kind of slim to none. I can see one car making their way in, but I'd be surprised to see more than two drivers below the cut line get themselves in. So it'll be interesting to see, but certainly a bit of a surprising start to these 2021 playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Those are the two drivers that were the surprise for me as well. Hendrick Motorsports drivers, they were on such a high swing there coming into the playoffs that I expected them to make it into this next round, and now it's not so sure. They've got to have really good races and in some cases at a must-win situation. You know, if any of these drivers do move up, like a Kurt Busch or an Alex Bowman, somebody else has got to move down. And you got to wonder who that's going to be, because as you mentioned, Andy, a lot of these drivers that are above them on that cut line are really good drivers, and they're good at particularly Bristol Motor Speedway. So, but there could be some surprises. You're absolutely right. We're going to get a surprise, I bet. And somebody's going to go home very unhappy that they didn't make it in to that next round. And I think we're going to be surprised. Maybe surprised by who wins, but also surprised by who doesn't make it. And I think the one person that could be a big surprise in all of this, either way, as I look at it, is Christopher Bell. Is it going to be one of those hero or zero weekends for him, where he could be a big surprise all the way around, either way? And it's hard to say which side of that surprise he might end up on. Same thing with Eric Almirola, I think. He could be a big surprise in all of this, either way. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a fun race to watch, without any doubt, Jay. Any additional comments from you?
Yeah, when we look at it there, Tyler Reddick is the one I was missing in between there. You talk about Kurt Busch and Alex Bowman being tied, just assuming they just both have a solid race. Tyler Reddick only has to pick up 5 points on the two of them, sitting at 248 versus 2053. So that's where I say that one could come down to a points battle within the race, and it being even top 10, 15 place finish, but still being pushed out if Kurt Busch finishes 14th. Tyler Reddick finishes ninth or better, you're talking about that being the jump that he needs. I truly think what's going to happen here is the surprise is going to come from above on somebody that has a bad day, gets knocked out, has a problem. We know that problem can happen to multiple at Bristol, but I think that's where it's going to come into play is who has the bad day, ends up finishing in a real bad position, and these other guys are able to just maintain and capitalize on it and get into that next round. The big factor, I think, when we talked about, and I know Andy wasn't part of that discussion of who we thought the first ones out were, Eric Almirola and Kevin Harvick were the two that we questioned. We saw the improvement with especially Eric Almirola's team picking up that win, had been running better, top 15, top 10. Harvick's been there top 10 all year long. The question was whether or not that would maintain enough to get him out of that first round, being that he started in the 16th spot. We've seen him get up to seventh now based on that. Expect that to continue if he can have a solid run at Bristol. Almirola is another one that has had good runs at Bristol, so may be able to stay up there. Looking at that, he's only 3 points ahead of Kurt Busch and Alex Bowman. And then you even move up to Kyle Busch is only another 8 points above that. So that's where I say this really isn't necessarily about who wins. I think it's about who has the bad race. And then we're going to see points racing within the race, getting the stage points. That's going to factor in at the end of the race, and that finish of that many positions in front of some of these other drivers. And it's not just one against the other. Like I said, Tyler Reddick could jump up. They could all jump up above Kyle Busch. Again, if he only has a 15th place finish, nine positions up, somebody gets a top five, it could push Kyle Busch out. So I think it's going to be an exciting race to watch the points throughout, not just the winner. We know that's important, and obviously, especially for those down the line, win locks you in, moves you on. The bad finish, possibly the win, but I think just solid finishes, and when I say solid, I'm talking 5th to 10th, because 15th, like I said, may not get it right now.
Yeah, and my question is, you're right. We've got to watch the points throughout the whole race. But, Andy, who has the good day, who has the bad day? is what it's going to come down to.
Oh, I think so. You know, and I think, you know, Jay brings up a good point there, is that it may not be so much who, you know, has the good day. I think, you know, if you can just survive and have a clean race, that's going to be mission accomplished.
Oh.
I think that, you know, who has the good day and who has the bad day is for sure going to determine who makes that next round of the playoffs. You know, anyone
from that... So, Andy, can they change the way they drive, do you think? Are they going to be more aggressive, or are they going to be more conservative because they've got to survive it?
That depends on who it is. If you're below the cut line, I think you have to be aggressive to try to get those stage points, and you have to try to remain up front. If you're a driver that's got a little bit of a cushion, then I think your goal is to just survive the race and get a top 10 or even a top 15. You know, especially if you're in that Kevin Harvick, Chase Elliott, Christopher Bell category where you've got a 25 to 17 point cushion. Even Keselowski in ninth at plus 13 has a little bit of a buffer. But when you get down to the, you know, the Kyle Busch at plus eight range, you know, you've probably got to be a little bit more aggressive than some to get those stage points so that you can build a buffer perhaps to go into stage three. But if you're below the cut line, I think even Reddick at minus five, certainly Byron at minus 18 and McDowell at minus 38, you have to be aggressive to try to win the race. And I think you have to win at all costs, because whether you come home in 20th with a clean race car or you come home in a piled heap, the end result is the same, right? You don't advance to the next round. So I think you have to be aggressive, and you're gonna have to see some aggressiveness. But I do think you'll see varying strategies, in the sense some have to be aggressive to get those points and contend for the win. Others, you know, may just need a solid night to make it to that next round. And, you know, if you've got a points cushion, you can probably afford to accept a top 10 and be happy with it. If you don't have a points cushion, you need those stage points and you need to go out there and contend. And that's what's going to make Bristol fun, you know, is when we know how it can be there at times anyway. But I definitely think that, you know, drivers, at least some, will have to push the envelope maybe a little bit more than normal if they're expected to make that next round.
Okay, some good points there. Okay, we are, Jay, it is your turn to bring up the next hot topic.
All right, well, Mike is the one that put it up. I heard it over the weekend that this weekend, I know coming up, John Hunter Nemechek was going to be in the number 54 for Joe Gibbs Racing. I take that back.
Mm-hmm.
Ty Gibbs is going to be at Bristol. Nemechek will be at Talladega, Texas, and Phoenix. Gibbs will be at Bristol, Las Vegas, Charlotte, Roval, Kansas, Martinsville. But on the broadcast, they did mention that John Hunter was going to get the opportunity here in the 54 in these closing races for the Xfinity Series. What does that indicate for the future?
Okay. Andy?
Well, I think it's a fantastic opportunity, whether it, you know, determines his future or not, that remains to be seen. But certainly we know the capability and the talent of John Hunter Nemechek. He certainly showed that this year, helping revive the KBM truck program. And, you know, he's had a couple good runs in the Sam Hunt Xfinity car, which is a car that has struggled a bit this season. I think he brings a lot to any program, and certainly – you know, I look forward to his opportunities in the 54 car. I can't recall if he's already driven for that team or not. I think Bristol was supposed to be the first start for them, and obviously that changed a bit. But any time you get the opportunity to drive for a team like Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity Series, you're expected to contend to win. And in particular, that 54 car has stood out to be arguably the best car in the series this year. And certainly when you combine that with somebody as talented as John Hunter Nemechek, I think that, you know, he's going to contend and possibly win a race or two this year. And what that bodes, you know, for the future, I don't really know. It's hard to say. I think we know that Gibbs is likely to move up full-time to the Xfinity Series next year. So does that leave an opening for John Hunter to also move up full-time? It's hard to say. I mean, that depends on funding. It depends on if JGR intends to retain its current driver lineup. We know Harrison Burton's moving on to the Cup Series. Does that create a second opening or not? I don't know. You know, I'd like to think that it does, but, you know, it all depends on funding. It depends on the openings. It depends on a lot of things for sure. But would it be cool to see John Hunter get the opportunity to go full-time Xfinity Racing with JGR next year? Absolutely it would. I think he'd be an instant championship and race-winning contender on a weekly basis. But, you know, I can't really speculate on what I think he's going to do because I just don't know.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard for us to say exactly what this means. I mean, I can see where some people could look at it and think maybe this is a prelude to the idea of Joe Gibbs having both cars, both the 20 and the 54, run full time. But again, all of that depends on the sponsorship. So time is only going to tell whether or not they're able to get full sponsorship. John Hunter Nemechek, back in June when they made the announcement, they said that he would be racing at Bristol this weekend, and now he's not. They put Ty Gibbs into that car, and I've got a feeling that that has to do with sponsorship. The sponsorship dollars did not run enough for John Hunter Nemechek to be in that car at Bristol. So that's why I think we're going to see Ty Gibbs there. So sponsorship is kind of the key here as to whether or not Joe Gibbs can run two cars full-time next year. This year they ran part-time, and they're struggling to get it even the part-time races in. So the other option here would be that he shares the car with some other up-and-coming driver, but I would hate to see that happen to John Hunter Nemechek. I would like to see him racing full-time if that's at all possible. You're right. We just can't say exactly what it's going to be. We can't speculate on what that's going to be because we don't know what the sponsorship situation is there at Joe Gibbs Racing and whether or not that's even possible to happen for next season. If I had my wish list, it would be we see Ty Gibbs in the number 20 and we see John Hunter Nemechek in the number 54 next year. And they're racing full-time on both cases. We'll have to wait and see if that actually does come to pass. But I think the fact that they didn't have a sponsorship for John Hunter Nemechek for this Bristol race, and that's why they're putting Ty Gibbs in the car, I think that gives us a little bit of a hint. So, Jay, your thoughts?
Well, you keep saying we can't speculate. I can speculate. I can guess all day long.
Yeah, we can
like
guess.
You said, it's
not
maybe
for
more
too long. You're right.
more of a dream thing, if nothing else. But being that it is in the playoffs and they can't run the Cup regulars during those races, it does open up that opportunity for them to bring in another driver like John Hunter. And I do believe it is kind of a test session to evaluate and try to put together a bigger sponsorship deal. I know Mike said here, I think JHN still has Fire Alarm Services as sponsor, but not how sure deep that runs, what level of commitment they might have. And I agreed with them. I don't think that one alone is enough to carry an Xfinity team for the year. So with that, I think this is maybe with his run at the championship in the Truck Series with Kyle Busch Motorsports, along with some Xfinity races, especially if he does well, I think is to try and build sponsorship deals for him so they can put him in full-time next year. That's my belief. You know, it is a speculation, but I think that is part of it. To try and build a bigger sponsorship deal that would carry him through the whole season. We may see it, like you mentioned, if he does a part-time deal, then I think it would be the Fire Alarm Services. They have been a sponsor with him throughout all his career, I believe, going back even to the cell phone team of the Nemechek to when he was with the Xfinity Series in Ganassi. I don't remember on the Cup level if they ever moved up with him at the Cup level with front row, but they have been tied to him very strongly, but I don't feel that is enough to carry him through a full season. So I think they're looking for more opportunities to make it happen for him.
Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, I mean, I'd certainly like to see him get an opportunity in the Xfinity Series again. And even if it's part-time next year, I know certainly running for a championship is better than not, but if he, you know, has the choice between driving an underfunded Cup car and maybe running 15 races in the Xfinity Series for JGR, I'd probably choose the latter option as a way to stay relevant, stay competitive, and win races. So I think he's certainly proven his talent in terms of staying viable in the sport for a ways to come. And, you know, he's certainly done a great job this year of kind of reinventing himself, if you will. And, you know, certainly hope he gets an opportunity to run more races in the Xfinity Series. One thing to consider is I don't know that he's ever even had the chance to go for the Xfinity Series championship. And I think when you consider, you know, Ty Gibbs being in the series full time next year, it kind of is easy to say that he's the immediate championship favorite. But if you were to add somebody like John Hunter to the fold, I think that creates a second favorite. So it'll be interesting to see. But certainly you can only hope that this Xfinity opportunity for a couple, three races this year leads to more of that for 2022.
Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to add. I think you guys both bring up some really good points. And, Jay, I'm going to pass it on to you for the last word here.
Well, I think, too, and I know even if Joe Gibbs isn't in the position to run him full-time, to give him that opportunity, just like Kyle Busch has, you know, he said this year coming into the Truck Series, they had the opportunity, they're making it happen as he runs for it, that whether or not he gets to have him back a second year, especially if he wins the championship, because he knows he's got the talent to move on, this might be an opportunity for him to showcase that other teams look at him to include possibly Colleague Racing. I know Matt DiBenedetto kind of got tagged to that here recently, and he denied that, but, you know, that's another team that is out there sort of looking for a driver if they want. So the opportunity just to showcase – go ahead, Sharon.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got to interrupt here. We're at that time of the night where I make an announcement to our first-time listeners so that nobody's caught off guard. We're going to go off air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. But we will continue our conversation beyond that time, and we'll record the rest of the conversation. And you'll be able to hear the rest of it because we're going to come out on – I'm going to go out on Twitter when we're done here and let everybody know that the podcast is available. You can listen either at Blog Talk Radio, the player that's there, or at vampiracing.com. We also have a player, and what you do is just fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. So, again, I'll go out on Twitter just to let everybody know that it's available, and that's when you'll be able to go and hear the rest of our conversation here. But we do want to alert our new listeners that there is a way for you to hear the rest of that conversation, and we usually make this announcement at this point of the show. So, Jay, if you want to go ahead and finish up your thoughts there.
All right, I was just saying that this might just even be an opportunity that Joe Gibbs Racing is giving John Hunter to showcase so that other teams can see his capability, which, truthfully, if they don't already know his capability, they're blind and not watching because we've seen it, but another opportunity, keeping his name relevant. And like I said, I think going after this Truck Series championship, I don't want to say winning it because obviously we got to wait for that, but been the strongest contender all year. I know he's got some competition now with Sheldon Creed picking up some wins. But Andy said reinventing himself or getting his name back out there as a top championship contender. So those, even those three races, I think can really show. And you mentioned what he did with Sam Hunt Racing. He wasn't my pick, and it would have cost me fantasy points, but I really did kind of want to see John Hunter win this past weekend.
Right, you got a third-place finish. That's not too shabby. Okay, Andy, what is our next top topic?
I was going to defer to you, Sharon. I'm not quite sure. I've got one queued up, so if either of you have got something to go ahead right now, go for it.
Okay. Okay, how about the heat inside the next-gen car is too high and a safety factor? I know that I'll go ahead and read Mike's thoughts on this because he brought it up. He said heat is already a major safety concern with the Gen 6 car. With how sealed up the cars are for aero, the drivers have really taken a beating from the heat standpoint. I'm surprised we haven't seen more heat injuries than we already have, and I really think it should be a big point of focus for NASCAR. They've gotten to the point where the cars are extremely safe from a collision standpoint, but I think heat injury prevention should be a bigger consideration going forward, and it'll have to come from NASCAR. I doubt teams would willingly give up and the aero advantage without it coming from the sanctioning body. Okay, so with that, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, Mike's not here to know it, so I'll go ahead and agree with him. we know that it has been. Over the past several years, this has become a more prevalent thing as they sealed the car up for aerodynamic purposes. It really has put the heat factor in these cars at a high level. I know we've got improvements with the cool suits and the cooling systems and all that, but they fail sometimes. I mean, nothing beats pure wind. I understand NASCAR, the concern, a safety concern, if more wind can get into the cockpit of the car when it gets sideways, that's what creates the lift and pushes the car up. But with the roof flaps that they've come with, allows it to escape back out and not hold onto the car and lift it up. So I think they may need to give some concessions. And we've seen it. I mean, I'm not saying we need to go back to the old days where it's an open window, but even drivers, when either they're trying to signal that they're coming off the track or even to just get a little bit of air into their car to hold their hand out that window there, I mean, have a tough time even just getting their hand out just a little bit to get some air in there. So I think something does need to be looked at, and I believe it was Denny Hamlin. Let me see if I can pull up the Jayski article. Denny Hamlin
I've
driving
got it
one
right
of,
here. Yeah.
For the. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Hamlin just said the heat in the cars is a big, big concern. Obviously, it's difficult because it's the way the car is designed. The design of it, having where the exhaust is all boxed in, running underneath the seat, it's hot. It's 450 degrees down in that box, and it's super hot. Now, John Polks, the senior vice president of Racing Innovation, said work remained on the heat in the car. He said, we obviously have a list of things to work on coming out of here. He said, we have to work on the heat in the car. We have some ideas there. We used the afternoon today to try some big swings at things and found some directions to go. So I feel like we made some really big gains there. So, Hamlin also felt that the heat, despite having an AC unit hooked to his helmet and wearing a cool suit under his uniform, it's that box underneath their seat that is super hot and making it uncomfortable for the drivers. Jay, go ahead.
And there you have it. Even with that AC unit, and like I said, we've seen many times where the hose comes disconnected. We've seen drivers fiddling with that or them have to make a pit stop for that. And as Mike mentioned, we did have a couple of races this year where we did have some drivers go through some heat issues. Like he said, it's surprisingly maybe that we didn't have a few more. Now, I know this invention or the usage of the cool suit, a lot more drivers have been going towards that. I don't know how much that helps. I'm not as familiar with that. But I know several drivers that said once they tried it, that was something they said, hey, we got to have.
because it helps. But is it enough? And like I said, the natural airflow, you can't combat that. And that also would allow some heat to escape as well.
Yeah. Andy, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's, I think, trial and error, right? You know, it's a brand new race car, and certainly, you know, they've probably learned a fair amount just from these on-track tests. But, you know, it seemed as if getting the cars out together for whatever reason at Daytona generated a lot of heat. This isn't something that I personally heard of until this test with the single car test that they've done. But for whatever reason, it seemed as if heat was a pretty big factor, you know, in this group test they just did at Daytona. So I think that given the fact it's a brand new car, you know, things oftentimes look good in design or on paper, but until you get out there and actually see how it does, you don't necessarily know, you know, how hot it can be, for example, in this case. So obviously, you know, in testing, you gather data, NASCAR can go back and the teams can go back and say what changes need to be made to these race cars to allow the driver to remain cooler. And obviously, by the time that this car enters full-time service next year, changes will have been made that will, you know, probably be more in line with the current car. And that's why they test. That's why they go out and do these things, so that they can learn and gather data. And that's the thing. This car has almost zero data on it, with the exception of a little bit of on-track testing the last year or two. So, you know, as we get down closer to, you know, the start of next season, I'm sure they will have learned a lot and changes will be made. So, you know, is it a concern? Sure, but that's part of the testing phase. And, you know, you have to think that they'll have figured some stuff out. And I'm sure over the course of running it its first full season, they'll learn a lot next year too. And you'll probably see even more changes, you know, throughout time. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think it's just part of it being a new car. And, you know, until you go out and run it, you don't always know quite what you have.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what this next test brings for them. They've been talking about the heat in the cars for a while, and you guys are right. It's not a new issue. This is something that has happened over the Gen 6 car as well. And, in fact, I think one of the drivers just recently had to sit out a race because they had exhaust, I forget what it's called now, but poisoning from the exhaust. So they had to take some time to recover from that. The fact that this box is an exhaust box that's holding all that exhaust underneath their seat concerns me a great deal. And I do think that they need to take some huge swings at that and find a new place for that. And find out ways that they can cool that off or hot, like Denny Hamlin says. So they're going to have to take some big swings at it. And it's got. I hope it's better than what they have now with the Gen 6 cars, because you guys are right. They've had problems with heat exhaustion and drivers just barely climbing out of their cars at the end of a hot race and being able to move. Some drivers happen to get oxygen after a race, or, you know, some kind of medical treatment after a race because it's so hot in their cars. And we've known for a long time that these cars are hot and that a lot of times it's not uncommon for drivers to lose, you know, 6 or 8 pounds in a race from the heat. So, again, they do have to take some big swings at this one because this is not a good situation, having all that exhaust boxed up underneath their seat. They've got to find ways to keep that exhaust from entering the cockpit and finding a way for that to be released so that these guys don't get those toxic fumes into their driving space. So I agree with Andy. NASCAR's still got time that they can take those bigger swings at this and make the improvements that need to be made. I have confidence that they want their drivers to be safe and that they're going to take those big swings. But I think it's good that these drivers are pointing it out. So, Jay, what are your thoughts? Follow-up thoughts?
Yeah, at least they're acknowledging it and looking at it. I think, too, it's not just the ceiling of the cockpit itself, but then underneath, which I understand was an aerodynamic thing. We've seen how in years past they're sealing the car to the ground, and I can't think of the proper term, with the spoiler and the plate that goes underneath it. I know they reduced that once already, but there, too, you're just sealing more and more heat in, and there's really nowhere for it to go. And with that comes then the exhaust fumes. If something happens there, I mean, there's some there naturally, but if something underneath does come apart and leak into the cockpit, carbon monoxide poisoning, I think, is what you were looking for. And we go back as far as Lake Speed. Yeah, Lake Speed, I know, was one that had a big issue with that, maybe prematurely ended his career. And I'm trying to think, I know you mentioned it, Sharon, there was a driver, I think it was in the Xfinity series here in the last 3 weeks, that did have an issue with that sat out a race, recovering from that. So, yeah, I think that is something that they definitely need to look at. My answer would be some type of air hole in the back of allowing the pressure out the back or the air out the back, but I'm not an engineer. And I like the way Mike put it of the teams themselves aren't going to necessarily do it, because if it comes to aero, they're looking for the aero and the downforce and the speed. It's got to come from NASCAR saying, hey, you're going to have to deal with this. You know, but their aspect, I think, more looking at it from the safety of, like I said, when the air gets in the car and under the roof, lifting up. So they're looking at it from that side of the safety. Teams are looking at it from the downforce speed. Somewhere in the middle, they got to come with the safety of the heat in the cockpit itself.
Andy, your follow-up?
I don't really have a whole lot of follow-up here. I just think that, you know, with further testing and further development, they'll figure out what changes need to be made. I just credit this to being a brand-new car, and you know, I think that trial and error will help lead them in the right direction. You know, obviously we do live in an age where engineering and computers and everything, you know, looks good on paper, and certainly, you know, the design is probably rather precise, but until you go out there and try it for real, you just don't always know how it's going to be. And I think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they have an idea what they can do to make things better, and I'm sure they will. You know, so we'll just have to wait and see what happens. Is it a big thing? Well, it is, from the sense of drivers getting too hot, especially over the course of, say, 500 miles, but you know that they'll make the right changes to make things where they need to be.
Yes, indeed. And I'm going to let that be the final word. And, Jay, you can bring up the next hot topic.
All right. Well, you talked about the ones at the bottom when it came on. You were talking about the four at the cut line. What about at the top? Are we seeing a shift in who we think the favorites are going into the championship for? Not necessarily winning it, but the ones that may be going into the championship for that may be a little different outlook now.
Okay, Andy, what are your thoughts there?
Well, yes and no, I think, is the best way I can answer that, because Kyle Larson, I think, still has to be considered the favorite. However, Denny Hamlin, who up until the Southern 500 went winless this year, despite being at the top of the points, I'm not sure many felt like was a Final Four contender. Now that he's won a race and finished, I think he was second or third, he was top five at Richmond, they seem to be getting hot at the right time, and that's what the playoffs is all about. It doesn't really matter what you did the first 26 races. It's all about what you do right now. And, you know, between, you know, the five car of Larson, I look at the 11 of Hamlin. Obviously, you know, Truex has been fairly solid all year, coming off a win at Richmond. I don't know that you can count him out. Blaney's been pretty hot lately. You know, those are kind of the guys right now, you know, and I'm not sure that anyone else has really demonstrated that they're a Final Four car. Just kind of looking over this list here, you know, Hamlin, as you know, Hamlin, Truex, and Larson certainly, you know, you have to believe are going to be in contention for that Final Four, you know, race at Phoenix. But beyond that, Logano, I'm not sure has shown the ability to do it. He is technically ranked fourth, but I just don't know if they've had the speed lately to demonstrate that. Ryan Blaney has had that speed. He ranks fifth. In my mind, he right now is that fourth car. Harvick hasn't really been there all year. Chase Elliott has had his flashes of contending, but hasn't really demonstrated the ability to go back-to-back as far as winning a championship. And then beyond that, there's no point in getting into that list. But at the same time, you know, there are drivers, big names back there, that are capable of winning and getting their way up into the latter stages of the playoffs. And so we just don't know. But, I mean, right now in my mind, if I have to pick the championship four, it's Hamlin, Truex, Larson, and Blaney. And I fully expect to be proven wrong on that, but I wouldn't be surprised if at least three out of those four are correct based on what I've seen this season and what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Andy. I think that the top three, there's hardly any question about it, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, and Martin Truex. And I think that's kind of been the case all season long, that those are the three, I think, that we kind of thought were kind of at the top of the list. And it's been variable on who that fourth person is, and has been so elusive to really identify a strong fourth person to be part of that Final Four. Now, Logano recently made a statement that he felt Team Penske was behind Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports, that he didn't feel that they were up to par. But Ryan Blaney and the runs that he's been having lately, I think have been really good runs. And I think he credits that to some conversations that he's had. I forget who it was with exactly, that kind of gave him a head turn, that kind of helped him look at things a little bit differently. And he's kind of come alive all of a sudden. So Ryan Blaney very well could be that fourth person, but so could Joey Logano, because his comments could also be seen as kind of a, I don't know, head game, I guess is what you'd call it, for the rest of the competition, by letting people know that he feels that, that maybe they underestimate what he's able to do, and he puts himself into that fourth spot. Now, he's certainly capable of doing that, because I remember the Big Three and Me with Joey Logano a couple of years ago, and Joey Logano came on strong. So I don't know that he's as strong as he was then, this year, but, you know, time's going to tell the rest of the story. But I have to agree, I think it's going to be Ryan Blaney, who seems to be in that zone, if you will, right now, more so than any of these other drivers at this stage of the game. Now, that's subject to change as we go on, but I think those top three are going to be pretty stable. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Not that I'm anti-Martin Truex, but that one to me was one of those we talked about of throughout this season has been hit or miss. And I don't remember how many months it said he had been since he had won his last race. Been either top five or 25th.
He won in May at Darlington.
Okay, so, that was a stretch, you're right. It was the previous Darlington race. So he's still a bit of a concern to me. I don't know that I would necessarily lock him into the Final Four. He's locked into the next round, obviously, with that win. But when it comes to the Final Four, I think the only two that I could say I could even pencil in would be Kyle Larson and Denny Hamlin. And Denny Hamlin was even questionable because there again, he had been top five, hadn't had the win, went through a little bit of a streak of not even being top five a little bit further back, but come out strong in the playoffs. I think he's had two top five finishes, the win and then a what, second or third. So that gives me confidence there. Truex picked up the win, had a good race, but does he maintain that consistently? Sliding down to the two you're talking about from Penske, Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney. There I look the same as Kevin Harvick. They're consistently top five to top ten. Is that enough to get you into the final four? And that would depend on who else wins. I think right now you may have to give, like you mentioned, the edge a little bit to Blaney. However, it seems like Logano seems to shine more at this time of year. I know Blaney's had his runs, and I think this next round is especially real good for him. But that final round of eight is where he has struggled a little bit. The confidence I have in him, though, Richmond was one of the tracks they mentioned as a not a great track. Ended up 14th right on the edge of the lead lap. So to turn that kind of performance in at a track that's not his best track gives you that confidence. The one I think might be a sneaky one, and I know, Sharon, you mentioned this, Kevin Harvick. We hadn't seen the Kevin Harvick of old throughout the year. Still running top 10, but not winning every week. He's still right on that verge, but we've seen him move up from 16th up to 7th. We've seen the improvement from Eric Almirola. So now it's a matter of if he can continue that upward trend at the right time, pick up a win. We know he can be solid at all the tracks. We've seen that throughout the years. So he might be the one to sneak in, ironically coming from 16th seed up into the top four.
Andy, your follow-up?
No real follow-up. You know, I think we'll just have to see how things progress through the playoffs, and a lot, of course, depends on who advances and who can't this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, you bring up some good points with regard to Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex. That's certainly true, and we'll have to see what happens at Bristol. Either one of those guys, any one of those top three guys, could have a bad day at Bristol, and it could change the whole complexion of where they are. You know, this was kind of designed for somebody to have a mulligan and still be able to compete for the championship when it was all said and done. But a lot of these drivers had their mulligan right out of the gate at the very first race at Darlington. So I think that's kind of changed up things as well. The big key is who's going to rise, which one of these drivers will be the cream that rises to the top. And I have said all year long that I think Kevin Harvick's going to come alive during the playoffs, and he very well could be the driver that kind of puts himself into that fourth spot in there. But I haven't seen that happened yet in these first two races. So we'll see what he does at Bristol and the rest of his season. But so far he hasn't kind of proven my theory to be true. In fact, tonight, part of me was thinking, I wonder if Kevin Harvick is trying to see if he can get into the final without ever getting a win. And maybe he is trying to see if he can make that happen. So, and maybe the only win he needs is that last win of the season. So we'll see. Kevin Harvick, if anybody's capable of that, I would think it would be Kevin Harvick. But we'll see what happens. Jay, your final follow-up?
Well, the other two, I know Andy mentioned them, Chase Elliott. Again, we've seen him do his thing on the road course. We've known the rest of his season has kind of been a ho-hum, if you will. So we'll have to see if he turns the wick up. And then Kyle Busch recovering, like you said, using up that mulligan early, getting back to where he had a stretch where he picked up his wins and was running back up in the top five, splitting up the Hendrick group, as he said, a couple races where they finished 1, 2, and 4 and 5, and Kyle Busch was in the middle. So that would be the other two. along with Harvick that I think we could really see sneak in as far as the final four. But that also then would need, when we do the preview show, we talk about it, they could do this if they get some help, and that would be some bad help or bad luck to one of these other competitors. Because, again, to get in that final four, running top 10 isn't necessarily going to get it done.
Okay. We are coming up on the top of the hour, so I think it's time for us to do our roundtable now. Jay, I'll start with you for the roundtable, and then we'll go to Kathy.
All right. You follow me on Michael Hoosman on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And I will, well, the Xfinity Series has one more race. I've been posting our fantasy group there on Twitter as each one starts the playoffs and where we're at. We'll tell you this. I know we'll cover it on Wednesday morning for the podcast.
Yeah.
The full details on it. But the playoffs, Sharon, you were one to capitalize on it this weekend. Big swing for you having Truex there. So you've jumped up several spots in two of the categories for sure, in two of the cases.
Wow. Okay. I was hoping, I was happy with double points, that's for sure. And Andy, your roundtable.
Yeah, CB14 fan on Twitter, and still not 100% sure about Thursday. I guess is it Wednesday, Sharon? We're doing that Wednesday morning, the next show.
Yeah, the next show we're going to do. I posted it on our Hot Topics thread. We're going to do the show on Wednesday morning because of the races on Thursday night for the next two Wednesdays. So. Both this Wednesday the 15th and also Wednesday the 22nd, Jay and I are going to start at 10 a.m. each time, which means that Hot Topics would start at 11:30 or, yeah.
Okay, so I'll be to be determined on that. I am working through Friday, and my schedule is always fluid because I'm on reserve, which means they can do whatever they want, how they want. So we'll just have to wait and see, hoping to be on Wednesday, though, and talk about Bristol, because we know it's going to be a wild one. In fact, Jay was so excited that he thought we were racing there last weekend. So
thank you, Andy.
I had to just jab you there a little bit, but understandably so. I'm looking forward to it too, and it should be a good one. So hopefully we'll be on Wednesday to talk about it, and certainly looking forward to it.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
And we'll put those shows out by about noonish or so. Go ahead. Or a little afternoon.
I was just saying, Andy, appreciate you filling in for Mike and making sure that you point out my mistakes. I was filling in for Mike, right?
Yeah, Mike does a really good job at that, so I just had to help him out a little bit, I suppose. Not that he needs it. So.
Okay, so again, I'm Fan for Racing Psych on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com. Now, we did have Sam's recap up for tonight, but Sam's getting married, so he's not going to have a recap for the next 2 weeks because 1 week he's going to be wedding, the following week he's going to be on his honeymoon. So if anybody wants to step up and do the recaps for these next 2 weeks and fill in for Sam, that would be great. We've got a big weekend of racing this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. And as I mentioned earlier, we are going to do our preview shows these next 2 weeks as podcasts on Wednesday morning. We'll publish those early in the afternoon on Wednesday so that you'll hear our preview of those races. Now, we probably won't have the benefit of having the news and notes because they usually comes out later on Wednesday or even early on Thursday. So unless NASCAR does that a little bit earlier than usual, we may not have the advantage of that. But Jay and I have done that before, and I'm sure we'll be fine. So looking forward to the weekend of racing and the podcast on Wednesday morning with you guys. So I hope everybody has a good week, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Have a good night.
Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.